Let's begin with the reading from Exodus. There was a hymn that we didn't sing. It had 9 verses, and I was going to ask Emma to play verses 1 to 5 to one tune and 6 to 10 to the other. Sorry, 6 to 9. And it wasn't just a gimmick. It was a way of highlighting that the Ten Commandments are split into two. Firstly, our relationship with God, and secondly, our relationship with other people. And this links directly to the cross of Jesus, believe it or not. The vertical is us to God, and the horizontal is us to other people. If we don't have the horizontal, we're just a stick. And without the vertical, we're just planks. But put the two together, and we've got our relationship with God and with others that can't be separated. Let's move into the New Testament. There are very few stories of Jesus that are in all 4 Gospels. Just think back to Christmas. Even at Christmas time, we have Matthew has got the Magi visiting, and Luke has got the shepherds visiting. And then in John's Gospel, we've got that mysterious bit about the Word, which isn't really about a baby being born at all. And from Mark's Gospel, 0. If anybody asks you to read the birth of Jesus from Mark's Gospel, they're pulling your leg. It's not in there. So in all 4 Gospels, what can we find? Believe it or not, that's it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 things the Gospels all have. Jesus' baptism, feeding the 5,000 men, don't forget the women and children. The details of what we now call Palm Sunday. Jesus' death on the cross. The fact that he predicted Judas' betrayal and Peter's denial. The actual crucifixion and the resurrection. So among those few events that all the gospel writers considered vital, why is cleansing the temple in all 4 Gospels? You'd have thought there was far more information that they wanted to share and write down for posterity all the way down to us. Now, as someone who, kind of stirred to anger quite quickly, I had a tantrum on Thursday night because Sainsbury's didn't have any bananas. I like to think that it's in all 4 Gospels because it shows that even Jesus had what we consider to be a negative emotion. But I do actually know that that's not right, and Jesus' anger was righteous, whereas apparently my anger wasn't. There is one point to note. I've put it in red, look. All the synoptic Gospels place this event at the beginning of Holy Week. But in John's narrative, we have Jesus going to the wedding in Cana, then to Jerusalem, right into the temple and causing havoc. So why did he do it? Well, we can take Jesus' words literally. God's house had become a corrupt and exploitative place of trade instead of just focusing on God. But there is more. Passover was and is when the Jews commemorate liberation and rescue from slavery. And Jesus brings to believers liberation and rescue from slavery to sin. In fact, in Rob Lacey's Street Bible, Jesus is not referred to as Saviour, but as Liberator. Same idea, different word. But let's focus on the setting. One of the hymns did that for us. The temple was there so that people could make sacrifices. And you've got to remember that back then it was the only way that worshippers then could deal with their sin. They knew what sin was, and they carried it around as a huge burden until they could afford those two doves, or whatever else was deemed the correct sacrifice. So they get their money together, and they go up to Jerusalem, and what happens? Because Jewish law required the sacrifices in the temple currency. But the people's money that they went shopping with and paid their tradesmen with and whatever else had got Caesar's image on them and weren't allowed in the temple. So first of all, the worshippers had to go to the money exchangers and change their Roman coins for Jewish ones. Now, whoever gets the best out of a currency exchange system. But then we heard that the dove merchants still hung around after Jesus had overturned the tables and dismissed those money changers, because they were wise enough to know that sacrifices were still going to be needed. Sometimes our routines become corrupt. I think back years and years ago, yes, I was on the ark, I know, learning how to do hospital corners and learning how to make a bed in the proper order. And then all of a sudden you go on a ward with someone else and they go, oh no, we don't do it like that, we haven't got time. We pick up things along the way, thought patterns, judgments towards others, attitudes and prejudices that become embedded in our hearts and minds. And we go about our everyday business, and from outside, everything looks fine. You might wonder why I chose these readings today. I didn't. As it's in the middle of Brian's series, I just went back to the lectionary. And the lectionary has tied together Moses delivering the Ten Commandments and Jesus cleansing the temple. And we could say that that hints at the old rules being overturned. But that's wrong. Jesus said, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've come not to abolish, but to fulfill. Many people think that the Old Testament is old hat and should be discarded, never preached on, and only used for satire purposes, like Arthur Hugh Clough's poem. Having said that, I really do like and think it's very relevant that thou shalt not kill, but needst not strive officiously to keep alive. I've always liked that one. It's a very good discussion starter. But Jesus is trying to re-establish the correct attitude towards those commandments. Again, think back. A rabbi was a legal advisor, a moral advisor, as well as a theological advisor. Those jobs were indivisible in Jewish law. And the legalists among the rabbis had really got stuck into those Ten Commandments. And instead of saying, they're hard enough, rabbis picked up the theme and extended it. And the Torah actually contains 613 commandments. If we had a wooden or an earth floor here and you moved your chair, that's plowing. You don't do that on the Sabbath. But before we throw our hands up in horror and just thank God that we're not Jewish and we don't have to learn and abide by all 613, Jesus himself came along and made the commandments harder. As you know, long ago God instructed Moses to tell his people, do not murder. But here is the even harder truth. Anyone who is angry with his brother will be judged. As you know, long ago God forbade his people to commit adultery. But I tell you this, any man who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery in his heart. An online resource, the Irreverent Reverend, writes this. The Ten Commandments are timeless in their instruction. They're a solid plumb line against which to examine our thoughts and actions. Sometimes we too need the tables turned over in our hearts and corrupt things driven out. So let's have a brief look at these Ten Commandments simplified a little bit. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make idols. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath. You're going to know these ten by the time you go home. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet. The commandments don't start with one should or man should not, but with you. And this is uncomfortable for Congregationalists, because we're not encouraged to say you, but to include the preacher in the worshipping body. I don't tell you to pray for peace in Gaza. I encourage us to pray that war will cease. But God, of course, via Moses, has no such qualms, because these are, after all, called commandments. They're etched in stone, they're stored in the Ark of the Covenant, and they're carried wherever the nomadic way of life led the children of Israel. So you shall have no other gods before me. That is exactly what Jesus was doing in the temple. He was saying that money, even back then, was pushing God out of the way. Do you remember when Jesus met Zacchaeus, the tax collector? Zac stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions I'll give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anybody," interesting use of the word if, "I will pay back four times as much," because he'd got the message. You shall not make idols. Moses went up Mount Sinai to meet with God. It was actually when he was being given the Ten Commandments. But he was gone a long time, and the children of Israel got panicky and asked Aaron, Moses' brother, to make them, do you remember this? A golden calf, so that they could worship it. But we don't worship idols, do we? We're no longer teenagers drooling over David Cassidy or Pan's People. But are roses or crosses or icons idols or aids to worshipping the true God? You shall not take the name of your God in vain. Matthew Henry was a British nonconformist minister and author, and he was born, curiously, in 1662. He described five different categories of taking God's name in vain, which we really don't need to examine, but I'll do it anyway. Hypocrisy. So in other words, saying something in here, like Jesus is Lord, and then going out into the world and kind of denying those words with our actions. Breaking a covenant. Lord, if you get me out of this situation, I'm going to save the environment by selling my car and riding a bike everywhere, but then not sticking to it. By the way, that wasn't an example Matthew Henry gave. And then he says rash swearing, which I'm guessing is just doing it without thinking. False swearing, which I suggest might mean you think about it but do it anyway. Or using the name of God lightly or casually. Basically, don't do it. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. We've now moved on to James Howell, who's a Methodist. And he's still alive. And he wrote this. The Sabbath is a day of faith. Because in order to rest, you must believe, you must trust God, and you must acknowledge that not everything depends on your own feverish activity. Now, for those of you who don't know, David and I have been suffering the trials and tribulations of having a kitchen refitted. Five working days have extended to eight. And yesterday, I said to the very sweet kitchen installer, "Is the plumber coming today?" And he said, "No, he's coming tomorrow." And I went, "No, he isn't." Shock, horror. I said, "Don't worry, I'll contact him and tell him." So I phoned the plumber and I said, "Sorry, Sunday is not convenient. I will be in church in the morning. Can you do Monday?" And just to punish me, he's waiting me wait till 3 o'clock tomorrow before I finally have a kitchen sink. Sundays are important, and if we don't tell people that, they'll forget. Honour your father and your mother. This is the second commandment that's worded positively. So we have remember the Sabbath, and then we have honour your parents. Think back to those times. We don't have to think back that far, even to Victorian era. Death was rife among all ages. Your mother was possibly not the woman who actually gave birth to you, and your father might similarly be an uncle or even a neighbour. It's just a reminder to obey your elders when you're a child and look after them when you become the adult. You shall not murder. The Hebrew word used is ratsa, which definitely means murder, not kill, which is quite handy as the rest of the Old Testament after Exodus is peppered with killing. But taking a life back then could be justified as doing God's will. Can we say that today? I know many ministers of religions are pacifists, and I'm going to say no more on that. But let's extend it a little bit. Where's our line on assisted suicide? You shall not commit adultery. Sex apparently is supposed to be good. Did you know that? But sex outside marriage so often results in broken families, poverty, and violence towards innocent people. It's bad enough today, but again, remember the cultural setting. Rural, nomadic, little villages on the move. So to keep the community happy, keep couples faithful. Adultery interfered with bloodlines, which was very important to the Israelites. And even today, I've noticed many blended families seem to need a baby that ties both families together. You shall not steal, nor bear false witness against your neighbor, nor covet. Any of these rules stepped outside the covenant relationship, both within the community and the relationship with other people and the relationship with Yahweh God. The juxtaposition of that horizontal and vertical, theological and social, just shows how following God can bring peace to communities, between neighbours and within friends. So, Ten Commandments, what do we reckon? Hard to follow? Impossible to follow? People back then were streaming to the temple to atone for their sins. What do? We turn to Jesus. Amen.